Good evening. I'm Karen Ashby, your moderator for tonight's telephone town hall. I welcome you to this live event and would like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Art Haywood of the 4th Senate District will take your calls as he discusses the budget address made by Governor Josh Shapiro earlier this week. As a quick reminder, if you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, that's star 3 on your keypad to ask a question and join in the conversation. Without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you very much, Karen. Good evening. This is State Senator Art Haywood. Welcome to our telephone town hall for my friends and neighbors within the 4th Senate District. I would like to thank everyone who is taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on this call. Now, whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. If you would like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 3 on your phone. Star 3. Now, as Karen said, this evening we will be discussing the budget address made by Governor Josh Shapiro. I'm going to share a few highlights from the budget before we begin to take callers. First, as you all know, Governor Shapiro is our neighbor. His hometown is in Abington in the 4th Senate District. And we are so proud of him and what he is doing, not just for our area, but the entire Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and really for the nation. Now, we're still looking into some of the details of the budget that was just released on Tuesday, but we wanted to provide a first look to all the neighbors. Let me provide some context to the budget that was presented on Tuesday. First, every governor gets a chance to say what they want to see. That is the governor's budget. It is not a statement as to what the end will be, but it is a clear statement of vision and what the governor wants to see. Before June 30th, we in the state Senate, state House, and the governor are expected to come up with an agreement on what is in the final budget for the year. Unfortunately, we went beyond the June 30 deadline this past year, not finishing the budget until November. There have been years where it has even taken longer to get the budget done. However, I am very hopeful that this year we will be on time. But I do want to highlight that the budget is a compromise. We have Senate Republicans who have the leadership in the Senate. We have House Democrats, leadership in the House, and we have the governor. Unfortunately, Senate Republicans have already attacked the governor's budget proposal and message. This does happen every year, but it doesn't mean it makes it more acceptable. Let me provide a little more budget context for all who are listening. First, the Trump administration has tried to withhold over $2 billion in federal funding from Pennsylvania. $2 billion, that's a lot of money. And they tried this in 2005 on programs that were intended to affect after school, environmental projects, housing, infrastructure, and more. Fortunately, Governor Shapiro has been successful in suing the Trump administration to release these many different streams of funds. But that takes a lot of effort, and we can anticipate further efforts from the Trump administration to take our money. Next, inflation has only gotten worse since President Trump started these chaotic tariffs. I have seen two reports that indicate that it's costing us between $1,200 and $1,700 a year per household to pay for these tariffs. And lastly, for big contracts, God creation across the nation has almost stagnated. Few jobs are being created around the nation because of the president's policies. Fortunately, Governor Shapiro, with our support, has been able to attract some new businesses to the Commonwealth, including businesses in the biotech and life sciences area, for which I'm especially pleased as a co-chair of the Life Sciences Caucus in the Pennsylvania General Assembly. But it's a struggle, and it's in this context that Governor Shapiro has made significant recommendations. Let me hit a few other recommendations from our neighbor, Governor Shapiro. First, he is proposing $1 billion, that's right, billions, in tax relief for homeowners. Homeowners of a certain income can receive over $1,000 in money back for their taxes. This is tremendous. In addition, he is proposing sustained sector funding. For the last 2 years, he has found one-time money to support sectors. He is still seeking the support, particularly of Senate Republicans, so that SEPTA can have long-term, reoccurring, predictable funding that it needs to operate. And finally, for this basic introduction, the proposal calls for raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour at least. And for those who are working for tips, to at least $9 per hour. You should know there's over 500,000 Pennsylvanians making less than $15 an hour. This is a disgrace. It puts us behind every state that surrounds us. So, there's much more in the budget that I'm prepared to address. Of course, there will be some questions I'm not prepared to address because there's some detail still coming through the pipeline. But, Karen, I think at this time, we're ready to take some callers and try to respond to questions they may have on what is in this budget.
Alrighty, a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad at any time. Again, that's *3 to ask a question and join in on the conversation. We're going to go live with Teresa. Teresa, you're live.
Hi. My question is, are you pushing to get marijuana legalized in Pennsylvania this year? Because that will be a big push to the budget.
You are exactly right, Teresa. And making adult use marijuana legal in Pennsylvania is, I repeat, is part of the budget proposal. It is what we are pushing for, and it will create a lot of money. Over $750 million is projected. So, yes, adult use marijuana is part of what we and the governor are pushing for. Thanks for highlighting that.
All right, thank you. We're going to go live with Eddie. Eddie, are you there?
Eddie. Eddie, we can't hear you.
No? Okay. We will move on. This is a question that came in earlier, submitted online, and Amanda was wondering if there's a place that she can go to look over the full layout of the budget.
So there's a few places that you can go. I recommend going to the governor's website. And, Karen, we can get everyone a government website, but I would recommend that as the number one place to go.
All righty. We're going to go live with Derek. Derek,
hello. Thank you. Hello, Senator Haywood. I appreciate and love the fact that you have this open forum, particularly for citizens of Philadelphia and maybe other nearby states. that might be interested in having, you know, on a state level, some representatives of ours that we can actually conversate with. But my question actually is on a national level to see where, you know, where your head is at and what your pipeline is telling you. There, I'm concerned about Trump and his family enriching themselves in total violation of the Emoluments Clause. Now, I recognize that it doesn't have a lot of teeth because it has to have a lot of specific parameters that have to be mentioned to do it, but it's not even being mentioned or spoken about on a Democratic level, which really bothers me. Further, tariffs should also be mandated by Congress, and Trump is the one that's sitting, all you hear is Donald Trump, but really he should not be able to do this without Congress. Why is all this happening and the Dems are so quiet? They're like deers in the headlights. What's going on?
Thank you for those questions, Derek. So let me first address the enrichment. I have seen a number of articles that describe in detail the enrichment of this president from using his office to get money for his family. Those enrichments not only include real estate transactions, but use of his image and much, much more. The most recent article I saw put his personal and family enrichment into the billions. And so the president is using his office, it appears, to make money off of the American people. And this is, I strongly agree, it's completely outrageous. Next, on tariffs. Fortunately, litigation has been brought on the president's use of tariffs. The Supreme Court is currently considering a case to reverse the tariffs because of the authority of Congress versus him. And so hopefully the Supreme Court of the United States will reverse these tariffs, which many have decided have come to the conclusion are illegal. I know a number of businesses that have applied for refunds. Yes, applied for refunds should the tariff be overturned by the Supreme Court. Now, these refunds are not set up for individual consumers. Obviously, that's a problem. But hopefully the Supreme Court will resolve the illegal actions of the president. Third, I and many Democrats I know have spoken out against the tariff as well as against the enrichment by the president of his use of office for his family. Now, I can't speak for all Democrats because obviously for a lot of them, but a number of Democrats that I am familiar with have been very critical. Now, the media is not focusing on some of the statements that some Democrats are making. The media has a different story, a different priority every day. So it's hard to follow the media to really know what folks are saying. But I want you to know that I and many of my Democratic colleagues are speaking out against this unlawful, illegal action of the president.
All righty. Quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press *3 on your telephone at any time. Senator, we're going to go live with Marty. Marty, you're live.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I work in home care and am very concerned for the actual caregivers. In most states, most of home care is paid for through Medicaid. What happens is that the caregivers providing care to these people are also on Medicaid as working poor parents. It's simply not a livable wage, yet it's very important work. This is saving healthcare dollars because people are staying at home rather than being institutionalized. The current budget does not include any increased reimbursement for home care, and I'm wondering if it looks as if through negotiations some increased reimbursement could be included in the budget.
Thank you so much for that question. And the low pay of home care is very familiar to me, as well as me and my Democratic colleagues. I think it should be familiar to everyone in the General Assembly, actually. And the impact on requiring folks to now depend upon Medicaid, publicly assisted health care, publicly assisted food, publicly assisted heating, all because of low pay. Budget negotiations can produce a range of results. My recommendation is for advocates to consistently be an advocate for what is important. And so for those who are focusing on home care, I would strongly encourage advocacy to raise the reimbursement rates. If there is no advocacy, then the chances of it happening are really slim. So that's number one. Number two, the governor and I have called for a raise in minimum wage to at least $15 an hour. I know that unfortunately there are some home care workers across the Commonwealth that are making less than that, because their averages are only a little bit over $15 an hour. You see, there's a number below the $15 an hour. So raising the minimum wage will increase pay and hopefully lift some home care workers out of poverty. One of the things that the governor did mention is that by raising the minimum wage, not only will we be able to lift some people out of poverty, but we will also be able to save money on these public assistance programs. So when people can pay for health care on their own, they can pay for food on their own, they can pay for heat on their own, then public assistance is not required. I am strong advocate in raising minimum wage, have been since I've been in the state senate, and firmly believe that hardworking people deserve the dignity of fair pay, not poverty pay. Thank you.
Our next caller is Elaine. Elaine, you're live.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if there's anything built into the budget for daycare for working families to help, you know, with daycare for children, and maybe even adults.
Yes, thanks so much. So let me take a quick double check of what we have in this budget for child care. In the past year, there was $25 million that was set aside to support child care workers and child care operations. And that was in recognition of exactly what you are describing, the lack of support for child care and the low pay in child care centers. What we know is that the child care workforce is the workforce behind the workforce. My wife and I have three children who are very young, and at the time when they were very young, we relied on child care so that we could both go to work. And it's no different now than it was then. Let me get back to you to see exactly the dollar amount associated with child care support. It has been a priority of the governor for several years. Again, do know of the $25 million last year. Let me get back to you with the answer on exactly the amount for the upcoming budget. Thank you so much.
All righty. As a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or join in the conversation, please press *3 on your phone at any time. We're going to go live with Robin. Robin, you're live.
Oh, my God. Thank you for taking my call this time. My question was, if and when marijuana is legalized for adult usage only, would there be some kind of plans for rebates for citizens in Pennsylvania, sort of like they have in Colorado?
Can you tell me more about the rebate approach?
Okay. Well, in Colorado, they receive a rebate for each citizen based on the sales of marijuana in that state. And I was wondering, would something like that be considered here in Pennsylvania?
I understand. Thank you so much for the clarification. So right now, the getting the approval of medical marijuana is very challenging. The details of the funding that I have seen in most of the proposals do not include a rebate. Now, there's been no final deal, so I don't want to give you the impression that there will or will not be a rebate, because the negotiations on adult use medical marijuana have a long way to go before they would get to conclusion. But most of what I've seen here is that those funds would be used for the operations of the state, such as increasing funding for education and for state troopers. So I'll look to see where the rebate proposals are in the legislation that's being discussed, but I haven't seen that to date. But let me say a few things about medical marijuana, adult use marijuana, while this topic has come up again. Adult use marijuana is in Pennsylvania. It's unregulated. We're not getting any money for it. But don't think that there's not adult use marijuana in Pennsylvania, and it's come from the border states that are around us that all have legalized adult use marijuana. So number one, it's already here. Number two, we need to make sure it's regulated so that it is safe out of the hands of children and those who should not have it. And that is important. The other thing we need to do is make sure that we bring a new industry like this, the marijuana industry for adult use recreation, that we have inclusion of those businesses that can participate in these new opportunities. The legislation from almost all I've seen, that's those that's in the streets and others, do include for protections of minors. They do include for having diversity in as a measure of success. So we are surrounded by states that have adult use marijuana, and being left outside only means that all the states around us are able to capture that revenue while we are sitting on the sidelines not doing so.
All righty. We're going to go live with Natalie. Natalie, you're live.
Thank you, Senator, for taking my call tonight. My concern that I'm reaching out right now about is on skill games. There seems to be a proliferation of these skill games in gas stations and convenience stores around the state. Is this actually a revenue base for Pennsylvania or something that's escaping us? Do you have a position on them? Thank you.
Thank you so much. So, number one, yes, these skill games are all over the Commonwealth, completely unregulated. And number two, significant state revenue could be generated, a lot of money could be generated by regulating these companies. The last estimate I saw was about $750 million every year by regulating these skill games across the Commonwealth. So I've seen a number of proposals about how they should be regulated in a way that don't further damage communities. And I am in support of such regulations, so in a way, though, and in a manner that don't further damage communities. Unfortunately, as you may know, some of the gaming enterprises have basically undermined some local communities, pulling money out of those who have least afforded. But even worse, some of our efforts to expand gaming and some of the sin activities of so-called sin activities of alcohol have brought businesses into our communities who are not following the rules. Let me give you an example. On Broad Street near Olney, there were a number of what they call stop-and-go stores. These small convenience stores were not only selling cigarettes, but also shots. Yes, liquor shops. in violation of some of the liquor laws. And it requires a lot of enforcement to try to rein these operations in. We're also, there are some concerns that some of these skill gangs, places for operation could create some bad community impacts. So this is part of the regulations that I'm very concerned about. I think we can probably achieve a balance, but it's a balance that has yet to be achieved in some of the legislation that I have seen. Let me finally say this. Skill gangs will be a matter of coming up with agreements that are compromised. Adult use marijuana will be based upon compromise between those who are involved in the legislation, including myself. So both of these are areas where the governor has proposed, adult marijuana, and the governor has proposed regulating skill gangs. Both can be achieved with compromise. Okay, Karen.
All righty. We're going to go live with Sheena. Sheena, you're live.
Hello? Sheena, go ahead.
Okay. All righty. We'll move on. So we are going to go live with General Muti?
Yeah.
General, are
Hello. Yeah, I'm listening. I hear you. First of all, I want to thank Senator Art Haywood, because I always participate in everything that you do, and I always come by your office. My question is a very serious question, Senator. I was fortunate enough to see a clip. I didn't get to see the whole thing and digest it. It's dealing with the curious case of Robert Williams. And he was basically, according to the United States Supreme Court, he was a child sent to prison. And from the prison to pipeline, preschool to pipeline, prison line. And those of us who study the prisons, we know that there's a lot of violence in the prisons, that there's a lot of dehumanization in the prisons by staff members, degrading treatment. And a lot of 90% of these people are coming home, and they're coming home after being traumatized by the staff environment. What have you done in the past, and what are you doing now, and what work are you setting up for the future based on what you're doing now to stop the preschool to prison pipeline and make stories like Robert Williams, the curious case of Robert Williams, a thing of the past?
Yeah, thanks so much, General. I cannot speak directly to the Robert Williams situation, but I can speak directly to the pipeline that you're referring to. My office has looked at this as fixing the opportunity pipeline. And I say fixing the opportunity pipeline because once individuals have a clear opportunity path, that will eliminate or significantly block the school to prison pipeline. Let me give you a few examples of how we can fix the opportunity pipeline. One, ninth grade is one place, well, let me start this part. We by fourth grade, we know, and I have met a number of individuals who are incarcerated who are not proficient at reading. At one time, the Secretary of Corrections, Mr. Wetzel, told me that if folks knew how to read, over half of the people in prison would not be there. Knew how to read, over half would not be in prison. And so I and my office have been focusing on reading by fourth grade. We have summer reading programs at least six recreation centers in Philadelphia. We have had over 1,500 children between kindergarten and third grade participate in our Read by Force initiative. So that's one place where we can fix where people are falling out of the pipeline, and we can fix the pipeline by getting our young people in a position to read by fourth grade. Second, ninth grade is another place where the people fall through the cracks, young people fall through the cracks of the opportunity pipeline and drop out. This is a big transition from eighth to ninth grade. My office has been involved in supporting many mentoring programs for young people so that they can better make this transition from eighth to ninth grade. This is another place where we can fix the pipeline where it is leaking. Next, higher ed skills training and apprenticeship program. My office has been consistently an advocate for skill trade programs, whether they're plumbing, electrical, or coding. Our office has also partnered with MLK High School, InfoTech, and Building 21 to create career readiness programs for high school students so that they can see what their future can be as well as see the choices for themselves. Our office has also, with those same schools, have a dual enrollment program so that those who see themselves ready for college or see that opportunity can get college credits while in high school. At least two students that I met at MLK High School who participated in this dual enrollment program shared with me that they did not think that they were college ready until they did the dual enrollment program. And then after that program, they saw that they were ready, and fortunately, they went on into higher education. So what we should do is focus on where our young people are falling out of the opportunity pipeline, fix those cracks, fix those leaks, so that they can continue to move up into an opportunity where they can have a family, sustainable income. And so, General, I ask you to think about this challenge differently. I ask you to think not about a school-to-prison pipeline, but instead, how we can fix the opportunity pipeline and get our kids on that and stayed on that and closing the cracks where our children leak out. Thank you for that question.
All right, a quick reminder, if you want to ask a question and join in on the conversation, please press star 3 on your phone at any time. Senator, we're going to go live with Monica. Monica, you're live.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my question, Senator. I don't know if this, I know this town hall is concerning the Pennsylvania budget. I'm not sure if my question touches just that, because I do believe it's going to generate tax revenue. And I know that this, what I'm going to ask you, is more of the federal funding, but what is your stance and Governor Shapiro's position on the ICE detention facilities that are being procured and run in Pennsylvania? There are already some here, and recently in the news, I think it was in Berks County, almost just a big facility was bought, a building, just as for-profit prisons that sustained for the ICE detention centers as well, and the awful conditions that exist in the managing of these facilities, just as, again, and thank you for the general question as well, mentioned the somewhat, you know, pipeline, about the pipeline, that children are being affected as well with all this that is going on now concerning these facilities and what's going on. So I'd just like to know what your stance is on this.
Thank you so much. Now, I'm not able to speak about where the governor is on these questions, but not with any reliability, but I can tell you where I am. So I am very much against this escalation by ICE of going into people's homes, pulling people off the street, arresting protesters, this is all a terrible escalation that I completely oppose, as well as I oppose this expansion of these detention centers, which are basically just going to try to warehouse individuals. And I've heard of many inhumane examples of inhumane treatment in these detention centers. And you may or may not know that an individual by the name of Perry Law was taken by ICE a few days later, died in detention center in Philadelphia. So I'm very concerned about this outrageous behavior. I do want to let you know that for every Monday at 11 a.m., myself, along with interfaith religious and community leaders, have had a vigil at the Philly ICE office at 8th and Cherry every Monday at 11 a.m. And we anticipate having, obviously, continuing these vigils to let the folks at ICE know that we're calling them to conscience. We're calling them to conscience to recognize that what they are doing is so wrong. We're also encouraging them to follow the higher orders, not just the orders of the president, but the higher orders of humanity, and stop these cruel raids, stop these cruel detentions. Finally, on the 16th of this month, President's Day, we will have another vigil, hopefully large, where we will go to the Federal Detention Center, as well as to the Philadelphia ICE office. And again, we said 8th and Cherry, we're there every Monday at 11 a.m., and we encourage you and others to join us.
All righty, we're going to go live with, go ahead, Senator.
Yep. I would like to hit a few more things from the budget before we take a call. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
So a few more items in the budget I'd like to highlight is, I did mention the funding for education, but let me be a little more detailed. So in addition to increasing funding for basic education, K-12, by $50 million, and special education by $50 million, this budget also calls for maintaining our effort to address the historic underfunding of public education, which has specifically affected Philadelphia school district. And so that's an additional $500 million to deal with the historic inadequacy of such funding. In addition, there's $80 million for gun violence prevention. This is significant. As we know, gun violence has gone down in Philadelphia. Many of the organizations that help send the gun violence down receive grants so they can get involved with young people and older people to get them out of activities that led to gun violence. On the energy side, I have been a big proponent of more renewable energy, particularly more solar. Not just solar, but a lot of it being solar. We know now that solar energy is less expensive than any other forms of energy. These requests for more renewable energy will not eliminate the need for oil and gas and some other forms, but it will create a more diverse source of energy. So when one source of energy is up or down, another can be up. And it's also the path to the future. And the governor has what he has called the Lightning Plan and the EDGE Tax Credit Program, both to increase the amount of renewable energy and decrease our reliance on oil and gas fossil fuels. The other thing I'd like to add is this. I think I already mentioned the sustained sector funding. If not, I'll mention it again. And finally, I have shared the dangers of the cuts in federal funding, of which we have been up to $2 billion, which we won back, but it costs money to win back, and sometimes you may win, sometimes you may not. The governor has proposed $100 million, what he calls the New Federal Response Fund. Now, under any other prior administration, we wouldn't have to set aside money for unexpected attacks. But under this administration, setting aside $100 million to deal with what the Trump administration may or may not do to our Commonwealth is a reasonable thing to do. It's a way to prepare for what some may say is the unexpected, but maybe it is at this stage in our history the expected. Okay, be glad to take some more callers to have me share those few points.
All righty. Quick reminder, if you want to ask the senator a question and join in our conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad. Star 3 on your keypad. We're going to go live with Darlene. Darlene, you're live.
Yes, hi. Senator, good evening. My question is, has there anything in the budget that's been done to eradicate ghost guns on the streets?
Thank you very much for that ghost gun question. So we do have legislation that calls for the end of ghost guns. It's not exactly in the budget, but that has been proposed, and our governor has been against ghost guns, and either a combination of elimination or severe regulation. So the governor is, and I, we're both for either the elimination, I think it's primarily elimination. Now, we do have some federal legislation. National government has also looked at this question, and there is some support in the national government for elimination or severely limiting these ghost guns. The ghost guns, for those who may not be familiar, are guns that are created without any serial number, without any accountability, is basically what I'm saying. And they can be created at home, are not requiring any kind of serious big manufacturing effort. And because of the no serial number, and because they can be created at home, this creates a real danger of proliferation, of having a lot of guns in our streets, which are unaccountable. Guns that have serial numbers are then subject to tracing and getting back to the owner and creating accountability. Without serial numbers, no tracing, almost impossible to get back to the owners for accountability. So these ghost guns are a serious problem, and thank you, Darlene, for highlighting that.
All righty, our next caller is Sheena. Sheena, you're live.
Oh, great. Thank you for taking my call. Senator, I wanted to mention that when I was 14 years old, I had a job at a recreation center, and the minimum wage at that time was $4, and it went to $4.15, and before it was over, it was at $4.35. I am now 67 years old, and the minimum wage, that's 53 years ago, you know, and so now the minimum wage is not even double. And I'm like beyond an age where it should be more than doubled by now. My other statement and or question is I struggle with the fact in the educational realm, I struggle with the fact that there is absolutely no way that you can take, and this is just based on my experience in teaching in alternative education, there's no way that you can take a 12-year-old back to kindergarten to actually, or first grade, or second grade, to actually get those skills that's needed for the reading, for the writing, for the arithmetic, for all of that. And so my struggle is, and I am a reading captain on my block, where, read before fourth grade. And, I have that right in front of my door. I put books out that they give me to put out. But I also have older children on my block who don't have the reading skills that are necessary to be successful academically in the school environment. So I don't know what's supposed to happen on both levels. You know, one, we're not actually progressing if we're still getting $7.25 for the minimum wage, which I believe should be a priority. And then two, it's difficult. It's difficult mm-hmm. to take a reader from, you know, and now we can go from seventh grade and we can go into high school because that's where some of the behaviors take place between seventh, eighth, and ninth grade to where the children are acting out behaviorally to where they end up in an alternative school and their behaviors don't change because they continue to be academically deficient.
I got it. So thank you so much. I understand. I got it. Thank you so much. So let me first address the minimum wage before I go to the education deficit. So number one, I agree 100%. The minimum wage of $7.25 is outrageously low. Hasn't been changed in over 15, 16 years. Where we all know that costs are going up every year, and particularly in the last several years. This low pay has one source, the Republicans. The low pay of 7.25 has one source in Pennsylvania, Senate Republicans. The governor, every governor I've been in, Governor Wolf called for raising minimum wage. Governor Shapiro raising minimum wage. The State House, which is led by Democrats, passed raising minimum wage to $15 an hour. They passed it. They passed it last year, they passed it the year before. This week, they passed another piece of legislation to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That was on Tuesday of this week. Moving, advancing it forward. What happened? This legislation passes the House, the governor in support, and Senate Republicans stop it. That's where we are going to have a change in order to get the minimum wage up in Pennsylvania. It is completely outrageous. It is a violation of the dignity of hardworking people that work at folks working 2-3 jobs and still in poverty pay. And it's outrageous. And I agree with you entirely. Education.
Sorry. Oh, go ahead,
Jenny. Yeah, I'm an education question. I'm going to say briefly. I don't know that I've seen a real solution for those who are 6 or 7 or 8 years behind the reading level. I do know we do have an adult literacy challenge in Philadelphia and throughout the Commonwealth. We do have an adult literacy problem. I'm aware of some programs that try to address it, but I believe that our biggest hope is dealing with the historic underfunding of the schools, basic K-12 schools, can do a more effective job with resources that they need for our children. Thank you so much.
All righty. Our next caller is Mike. Mike, you're live.
Good evening, Senator, and thank you for your service to the community. I was just wondering, what's in the budget, is there anything in the budget as far as creating programs, you know, as far as like rec programs and stuff, what are you to go and do, that right there would probably alleviate a lot of the mischief and violence given the use somewhere to go if something to do.
Thank you for that question, Mike. I firmly agree that youth programming is critical for our young people so they have something productive to do with their time after school as well as beyond. The state is supporting what is called a BOOST, B-O-O-S-T, a BOOST program. And the BOOST program is intended to address exactly what you described. It's an after-school initiative that would be supported. I need to get back to you with the exact amount that we are putting into the Boost program. I don't see it right off the top of my, in the top of my notes, but I can get back to you on that. But it is recognized that after school program is critical for our young people and for our families. Karen, before we take the next caller, there's a couple other things I wanted to highlight.
Okay.
So we know that our firefighters and EMS workers have needed support for a long time. And so in this budget, the governor has placed $75 million for firefighters and emergency workers. This is important to so that this workforce can have decent pay, decent equipment to do what they do. The governor's also is got a proposal to close what we call the Delaware loophole. This is basically where companies in Delaware register down there so they can reduce paying taxes up here in Pennsylvania. Now, by closing that loophole, about $1 billion would be saved and available to the Commonwealth just so companies can't get away with opening up in Delaware in order to avoid the taxes that are due here in Pennsylvania. On the mental health side, there's the 988 phone number that I want to promote for individuals who may have a severe mental health challenge. It's the mental health crisis line. $10 million is being added to the mental health crisis line so that it can be a place for people to get support throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Those are just a few of the additional highlights I wanted to add for the big picture of what is in this budget. Again, what's in the budget is not agreed to. It is a proposal, but it is a strong proposal which I support and which I think we should be able to support so that we have a Commonwealth that works for all of us.
Are you ready for the next caller?
Yes. Yeah, thanks so much.
Of course. Okay, so we're going to go live with Caleb. Caleb, you're live.
Good evening, Senator and other constituents. I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner. My wife and I own a nonprofit community organization that front faces with mental health in our community. I came on a little bit late in the conversation, but you said there was $20 million in grants to decrease gun violence. I feel that our business directly, you know, vicariously and directly affects and decreases those statistics. How does a small community nonprofit gain direct access to those funds?
Thank you so much. So the total amount is $80 million. Now that's proposed. It's not done. That's proposed. So we won't know what's final until hopefully the June. Second, these funds are competitively distributed. Individuals and organizations have to apply, and those applications are ranked. So it is a very competitive process. Third, the organization, Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, PCCD, is the organization that receives and makes decisions on these grants. If you can contact my office, we can make sure you're aware of when the next application is for submission to make a difference. I do know that mental health services, community mental health services, are eligible. It's an activity that's permitted, that can be funded. So you are right that mental health services can make a big difference. It's recognized by the state as well that mental health services can make a big difference. But we'll contact my office so you can put together hopefully a competitive application and get funding. Now, if you haven't ever received any funding from the state or if you're a very small organization, I do ask people to think about joining up, partnering with a larger organization. that may increase the chances of getting funded for those who are small and new. Thanks so much.
All righty. Our next caller is Annette. Annette, you're live.
Hi, Senator. I have two questions. My first question is, I live in Montgomery County, and I want to know, can anything be put into the budget to stop the county from charging senior citizens a fine of $400 if they don't shovel their payment in a certain amount of time? This is what happened to me, and I have to go to court on the 26th of this month. My second question is, senior citizens that's on Medicare and pay a high premium for their 20% insurance, can they put into the budget for any kind of reimbursement for senior citizens to get?
Thank you so much, Annette. I understand both of those questions, so let me address them one at a time. First, on the fines for shoveling, the state really isn't involved with these kind of county decisions. There's 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and they all have their own power and authority. So the state doesn't really rule over the counties in the way that you're suggesting, to say what laws they can pass and they cannot pass in that respect. So I'll look into this question of fines, whether it's permitted or not permitted. It's not obvious to me that it's something that the state could regulate, but I can certainly look into that question and will. Second, on Medicare reimbursement. So Medicare is a highly regulated federal national government program, and it's very little that the states can do with the Medicare program. However, whether we can do any reimbursement for the expenses you're talking about, I'm not 100% sure. That's something we can look into as well. But generally speaking, the Medicare program is so regulated by the national government, my first inclination is we may not be able to do that. But I'm not 100% certain, so that's something we can look into as well. Thanks so much.
All righty. We're going to go live with Sakina.
Hi. Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I had two questions as well. One was, I'm a nurse practitioner, so I was looking to find out if there's any movement on full practice authority for nurse practitioners in Pennsylvania, because one, it increases access to care, affordable. And if nurse practitioners create businesses with a collaboration with a physician, if the physician retires, then the business is lost. So that's one. The other one was the waiver program is only allotted for seniors on Medicaid. And the form of person did ask a question in regards to Medicare. So I was wondering if there is any talk of this caregiver program for patients that are middle class and may have Medicare Advantage as their insurance.
Thank you. So for both of those questions, let me address them one at a time, please. First, on the full practice for nurse practitioners. This is something that has been discussed in the General Assembly for every year that I have been there. And I have been a supporter of full practice authority for every year that I have been there. Whether we will get it done this year or not, I don't know. I will say that, however, The more there's advocacy before practice authority, the more likely it will happen. So I encourage you to continue to be an advocate, because without your advocacy, it's not going to happen. Whether it be this year or not, I don't know, but there's been increasing demand for it to happen, and I support it as well. Secondly, on covering some of these, in this case, Medicaid costs, I would say that the current General Assembly is probably not leaning toward spending more money in this area because of how much money we have, some threats to our money from the Trump administration, as well as Senate Republicans basically not wanting to spend more money in this area, and particularly for Medicaid, in my discussions with them. So I do think this is, again, an area where advocacy can make a difference, but I would say my current assessment is kind of similar to the ones I have with respect to Medicare. I don't see us going in that direction at the present time, but some legislation that I have come to learn can take 5 or 10 years. The fact that legislation doesn't happen quickly doesn't mean it won't happen. It just means that it takes a significantly longer effort to make it happen. So advocacy here, I think, can make a difference over time. And joining with organizations that are already doing the advocacy, so you're not out there alone, be part of a statewide organization, has also made a big difference that I have seen in getting legislation passed. Wow, I think we're near the end. Or maybe we passed the end. What do you think, Karen?
I think so.
Well, hey, everybody, this has been a great discussion. Thank you. Thank you for participating in our telephone town hall discussion. To those who listened in and to those who asked questions and gave us suggestions for more research, all of it is appreciated. Now, if you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. I want to specifically thank Teresa, Amanda, Derek, Marty, Lane, Robin, Natalie, Annette, Caleb, Mike, Darlene, Monica, Sheena, General, and anyone else I may have missed, which I don't think I did. But if I did, thank you all for calling with these questions. Again, thank you for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office in Philadelphia at 215-242-8171. Or you can visit my website at senatorhaywood.com. Thank you again, and good night.